This morning's opening words come from Black Elk, and the title that I've given it is The Sacred Hoop. There I was standing on the highest mountain of them all, and round beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell. And I understood more than I saw. For I was seeing in the sacred manner of things, of the spirit and the shapes as they must live together like one being. And I saw the sacred hoop of my people was one of the many hoops that make the circle, wide as daylight and starlight. And in the center grew a flowering tree. Good morning. I'm Michael Nelson, the minister here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Whether you know your life primarily through the lens of your mind and the analysis that it provides or through your heart, may you find the balance that helps you be fully human. Whether infinite possibility makes you contract with its largeness or expand with its infinity, may this morning help you to experience awe. Whether you believe great worth lies within what cannot be seen, or you rely on empirical evidence to determine worth in your life, may you be at home in our progressive community of love, who knows that by working and playing together, we can be of service to this broken world. Whoever you are, whomever you love, you are welcome here in this place. Do you have an order? Give us to walk in beauty, sing the uncommon in the common, aware of the great stream of wonder in which we and all things move. Let us move in the light that guides us to wonder. Now is the time in our order of service when we share announcements. And let me just provide a side note here. This, if you have an announcement in addition to the ones you find in the order of service, the way we handle that is that you give me or the convener a three-sentence maximum statement of your announcement. So if you have an announcement in the future, please provide that to me or the convener, and we will be happy to share that with the community. The pastoral care, the personal joys and concerns are not the place to announce. They are to share what's deeply moving us. So I'd just like to make that distinction. So we do have three announcements that are in addition to the ones in the order of service. We are lucky and blessed to have David Yarrow with us. And there are a number of events that are happening in Manhattan. These flyers will be outside, and you can pick them up and go to whichever one calls you. Please contact Anna Franklin if you would like to volunteer as one of our permanent Happy Kitchen Breakfast Cookers, which is a great thing that happens twice a month on Friday mornings. Anna's right there. It's a wonderful service, and it's a great thing to do. And I have one more announcement. Oh, yes, from Stacy Brockman. If anyone would like to sign the SOS petition regarding funding for social services, see Stacy. Stacy, raise your hand. There you are. Please do so. Now, let us sing, We Celebrate the Web of Life, number 175. I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests. May you find this a place this morning of inspiration and awe and comfort. Now is a time in our order of service when we share those personal joys and concerns, or the mix that illuminates and bring depth to our lives. Is there anyone who would like to share a joy or a concern or both?
I would express great joy to see in front of me this lady, Edith Henricks, who was a member here for many years and a dear, dear friend, and I'm very happy to see her here today.
All right. Welcome, Edith.
Thank you, Molly McGoy. I had a personal joy, on Friday of this week. I got to see Nick's class sing to the veterans at City Auditorium, and it was very emotional. I cry at everything. But after the kids did their performance and left, the person of honor for the day, the veteran of honor, will be turning 99 next week, and he was an artillery scout at the Battle of the Bulge, and it was just very emotional, and you know, the whole room rose and clapped, and it was a wonderful day, and I was very proud of Nick's classmates and his teacher. Also, on a more joyous note, so thank you to any veterans we have here. I know we have several. Ken. And a special guest has come today for the K-2 classroom. I don't know if she wants to stand or not, but Pat Payne is here. And she brought her assistance dog in training, Barstow. And the kids are going to become experts at all about assistance dogs in the next hour or so. So ask questions of the kids after they learn everything. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Deirdre Greeley. I just have one really amazing joy. My husband is home from Iraq after a year of service. I'm glad he's back.
I'm sorry to follow that with a little bit of sadness, but last spring I had donated my favorite piece of art that I had inherited to my childhood elementary school, and I just found out this week, and it was made from part of a tree, and it was something that children loved, and it turns out they lost track of it within a couple of months and probably threw it away. So.
I have several joys. I'll only talk about two. One is being here and seeing all the faces and people that I know and love. And I'll be here next week, too. And the other joy is playing with my 8-month-old great-grandson, which has been wonderful.
I have a joy. The day after Thanksgiving, I'm going to a wedding of my grandson and his fiance, but it's going to be a little different. It's going to be in a synagogue, and both of them have degrees in Bible and religious studies all over the world, and the bride decides she wanted to convert to Judaism, while her husband is staying Christian. But her husband's father is Jewish also. And so we have a real mixture of that religious persuasion. And so it's going to be exciting to see them. They're a lovely couple.
My name is Mike Benella. I have a joy today as well. Oh, sorry. One is that I just learned how to use this thing. The other is that I had a doctor's appointment in Kansas City. I have an autoimmune disease that I have to take a pretty ugly medication for. And going to the doctor this week, she said I could go off of it. So I am now very relieved.
So for all those joys and concerns and the great mixture that brings us great vitality in our community and personal lives, we honor. And we also honor all of those joys and deep concerns that we carry that are unspoken, which are equally important. So be mindful. I think Ryan's going to need some help, so whoever would like to come and help him, please do so. And there we go. Good.
Hello. Would like to invite all the children up for the children's conversation. I'm Ryan Meyer. This is my wife, Katie. So the theme in RE this month has been social action. So today, my wife, Katie, is going to read a book, the Peace Book, and it's going to help us learn ways that we can create a space of peace for ourselves and other people.
Okay, can everybody hear this? Is that okay? All right. So this book is called The Peace Book. Peace is making new friends. Peace is keeping the water blue for all of the fish. Peace is listening to different kinds of music. Peace is saying you're sorry when you hurt someone. Peace is helping your neighbor. Peace is reading all different kinds of books. Peace is thinking about someone you love.
Go over there. She wants to sit with you.
Peace is giving shoes to someone who needs them. Silly caterpillar. Peace is planting a tree. Peace is sharing a meal.
Okay, we're going to ask everybody to sit down, Lukey.
Hey, Luke, can you sit down, sweetie? Thank you.
Good job.
Peace is wearing different clothes. Peace is watching it snow. Peace is keeping the streets clean and offering a hug to a friend. Peace is everyone having a home. Peace is growing a garden. I can hold it. How about that? Peace is taking a nap.
Where?
Right there. Yeah, look. Peace is learning a different language. Peace is having enough pizza in the whole world for everyone. Peace is keeping someone warm. Peace is new babies being born. Look at all those babies. Look at that.
That was cracking.
That's an egg cracking.
Cracking.
Yeah. You see the babies? Sit down, Luke. Sit down, Luke. Peace is being free. We're almost there. Peace is traveling to different places and wishing on a star. Peace is being who you are. Here's the last page, Kieran. Let's see if we can listen to it. Yeah. Peace is being different,
feeling good about yourself and helping others. The world is a better place because of all of you. The end.
Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere you may go.
Since this is the second Sunday of the month, it is our Helping Hands Sunday, and the offering this morning, unless it's designated to go to the fellowship, is to go to SCORE. Now, some of you have heard what SCORE is, but I will tell you more about it. SCORE is the Southern Cluster Outreach and Extension Ministry, which means that our little cluster in Kansas of seven or six Unitarian Universalist fellowships, congregations, emerging congregations, are being served by an extension ministry effort. Now, you think that this may be new, but of course, all of you who know the history of this fellowship know that it's not new at all. Monroe Husbands, who was the great mover and shaker after World War II up until 1967, helped found hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fellowships across the nation. When the AUA, the American Unitarian Association, did not have money to send lots of money here and lots of money there. And if we step back to the 19th century, when over 80 attempts at creating progressive religious organizations named Unitarian or Universalist failed, you could track the success and failure rate by how much resources were provided to them by the big organization. And then this fellowship started, actually not its inception date as a fellowship, but Monroe Husbands visited here in 1954. And he also visited Parsons, Kansas. And it's from that original meeting that this fellowship grew and has prospered. And since then, you'll also had David Grimm as your minister for 10 years, who served in the extension ministry department, which I was also trained as extension minister, which was designed to help fellowships or congregations that were small enough but had the potential to grow to reach that potential. So for 3 years I worked in that David served here for 10 years and seven in Topeka. So that extension ministry program was funded by the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Association, and it had great success in many ways and lots of failures. Anytime you take a risk, you're going to have success and failure. But this is a success story. So in part, we not only owe our existence to the AUA and the Universalist Association back in the 19th century, because it really planted the roots for progressive religion to take hold. Not many did. But do we need it today? Do we need a progressive religious, progressive faith, a liberal outreach in Kansas today? And I think the answer is unequivocally yes. So SCORE has been around for 7 or 8 years now, and what it has done, it has moved the Lawrence Unitarian Fellowship from being a very closed-in, country club-like society with no ministry or very little ministry, to an open ministry where they have a minister now. And at that time, we received $20,000 from a fellowship that failed in the Kansas City area because they refused to grow. They wanted to be a little club that met on Sundays and talked about their ideas that interested them, but did no outreach to bring people in and to serve the community. So that $20,000 helped the first year of SCORE, and then the UUA, when it was flush in funds before the great economic crisis started, helped with other grants that allowed Lawrence to move to a minister.
And after that, we were also working with Hutchinson, which is a universalist society that was founded in 1870 and was known for ordaining women back in the 1870s. Now, this is a powerful, powerful connection. Think about it. Approaching Western Kansas, we have a universalist congregation saying yes to women in a very powerful way. So today, Thea Nietfeld is there twice a month, who is our extension minister at this time, and to pay for her little house and her thrifty, frugal life, she has to have 5 jobs. Part-time in Salina, part-time in Hutchinson, doing work for the Nonviolence Network, working for hospice, working to develop peace networks across the nation. We now live on a budget of $500 a year. And Emporia has yet risen again. There was a church back there in the 1870s that really modeled progressive religion because it was one of the few places that invited all religions to come into that house of worship and to gather and to do good work, to help people who were poor, to help the starving, to provide resources for people, not only the physical resources, but the intellectual schools and after-school programs. And now 18 people are meeting in a coffee shop every third Sunday at 4 o'clock to begin a Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. But they need guidance. They need the help of people who have done this before. They need the help of all of you, not only in giving money, but maybe going there and being a presence on one of those Sunday afternoons, saying, you can do this, because we know that there have been periods of this fellowship's life when we were down to 12 people, and you were ready to disband, say, kaput, done, no more. And look today. We're filled with people. We need to fill many places like this across the state. If we do 1 or 2 or 3 in the next couple years, that would be a great start. So please, as you are able and willing, contribute to this effort to continue extension ministry and reaching out to help in ways that very few other progressive religions do. Our helping hands is an important part of our culture. Let us make it important today. Sacred Earth, Sacred Geometry. I'd like to share a legend from the indigenous people. I don't know which. I found it somewhere. I don't know where. But I give credit to whoever, all the people who have created this legend. A very long time ago, the spirits all got together to assign home for the sacred beings. They started in the West. They decided that would be the home of the thunder beings, the givers of the rain and life-giving water. Moving to the north, they declared it the home of the Buffalo Nation, providers of all that is needed to sustain life to humans. The next sacred direction was to the east, the home of the Elk Nation, teachers of how to walk in beauty and how to have healthy and long-lasting relationships. The south was given to all other animal spirits to teach us acceptance and tolerance of those that are different. To the sky they gave the home of the great mystery, the creator of all living things. The earth became the home of the Mother Earth, the giver and sustainer of life to all living things. With all of that done and only one direction left, the spirits got together and wanted to place the seventh direction where it would be hardest, the hardest direction to get to. So they thought, some of them thought, let's put it at the bottom of the ocean, the deepest, darkest, coldest place in the bottom of the ocean where no one is going to find it. And then others said, no, Let's put it on top of the highest mountain where it is so cold and the wind blows so hard that there is no way anyone will reach that pinnacle and find that direction. Eventually, they all agreed that the humans had to be able to find it, but they wanted it to be a place where it would be hard to find. And they said, why not put it here, inside? A place where many of us seldom look, seldom seek guidance. Instead, we prefer all the things that make us get through the day and don't take time to move into here to find our place of power in the world, the place where we are given life and give back. Today for me is a day about awe. It brings us into the mystery of our existence by understanding that the most common thing holds in it such majesty. The little rock, the twig, the chickadee. And I tried to think of some kind of symbol, some kind of metaphor that would carry me into this place of wonder that I knew but didn't know. And then I remembered the little red chair. My mother told me when I was about 5 or 6, after we had moved from Lindsberg, Kansas, when I was 3.5 years old, to Chicago, that they had left behind my little red chair. And this was my very favorite thing. I would hide under it. I would build forts and tents and make villages around the chair. And I would stand up and I would conduct the birds outside the window so they could sing better. And it was a place where I would sit and try to puzzle through my first book. I don't actually remember that red chair, but as soon as my mother told me that she had left it behind, something in my heart just cracked open. And I could feel this intense longing for this little red chair. This little red chair where I could sit and look out into the world that was mine and becoming mine. As I learned language, as I learned names, and as I learned about relationships, as I learned how to get what I wanted, all those things happened in that little chair. And they connect me as I look back at pictures to my grandfather who died before I remembered him. But in those pictures, he was the one who would take care of me. You could see, even if he was across the room and the room was crowded with people, his eyes were on me. My grandfather, Walter. So one sits in that chair and can feel the love from all the ancestors coming into me now. All those people that make my life possible today. So that little chair can hold so much potentiality for growth and for investigation and for the imagination to have free reign. How often in our lives does the imagination have free rein to touch points of power, of sacred connection? And it is there that I also know I was born in the Smoky Valley along the Smoky River. And this is a place where legend has it that buffaloes, the herds would be so big that they could drink that spot where we fished on the Smoky River dry. There was a time when there were that many buffalo. They would just drink the whole thing dry, and it would take a day for the water to flow through again. The power of that connection and the loss. To remember that. And the Kansa Indians who had their hunting grounds further south in McPherson is very close to the Smoky River on the Turkey Creek, I believe Jim would say. Is that correct, Jim? Yes, okay. Well, anyway, so it can go further and further back. And I can remember Dick Cattell telling me about his brother who has Alzheimer's driving through the Flint Hills, and he would look at the hills and say, "Look at those islands. Look at those islands." And they were the tops of the hills. But of course, we know that 300,000 years ago, there was a sea here. So maybe some of those hills were above the water. And they were, in fact, once islands. So the power of imagination tied to fact creates a tension that is so important to religious life. A tension that we need. It's not fact. It's not just intuition. It's not just heart or mind. It's bringing them together so things can flourish and grow and rise. So we have sacred geometry, which is that interconnected web of existence. All those lines leading to that blooming tree that Black Elk speaks of at the center of his vision, when all the circles of all the nations, of all the people, where you begin to see yourself as one. And I realized this morning as I was meditating that that blooming tree in the center of that sacred circle is us. It's the seventh direction. So where in your life do you create that circle, that spiral, where you are sitting in your seat of power and can rise and do good and to feel joy, to be connected to the beautiful day, to the oaks, to the rivers, to the scorpions we're on the very edge of their northern range. I have found them on this property. 420,000 years ago. That's when they started arriving here. So as those creepy, kind of scary creatures crawl about, they're here. And they are as important as the eagle that flies across the river in the winter. They're as important as the breath that you and I share. And I would just like to tie this into one important Unitarian figure, David Servetus, who was born 500 years ago in Spain. And he wrote a number of books that questioned the authority of the church, Protestant and Catholic, as Protestantism began to emerge. He questioned, how could there be a God divided? It didn't make any sense. And he said there was nothing in the Bible that could ever even lead you to make that conclusion. And he said that there should be an incredible tolerance. And our president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Peter Morales, was just there to celebrate a Congress of appreciation of this man who was a heretic, who fought for liberal religious values back in Spain 500 years ago. And at 48, he was burnt at the stake in Calvin's Geneva. So there are people who have died for freedoms that we enjoy today. That is another powerful connection. That is part of the sacred geometry that we share. And now I would like to make room for David Yarrow, who joins us this morning, to share just the tip of his wisdom, or maybe the depth.
Thank you, Michael. I'm already inspired today. I'll try and take you a little further. I want to thank Pat Embers for arranging for me to be here. She's done a lot of work to schedule me to do lots of surveys and give talks. But basically, I'm here on a pilgrimage, a spiritual pilgrimage. I was invited to Kansas 3 years ago in 2008 and spoke at a conference at the White Memorial Camp down in Council Grove. I was the keynote speaker. It's a little awkward because I knew nobody there and nobody knew me. But it worked out very well. And they kept me real busy that 5 days, but in between times, and events, I managed to look around outside and began to discover some very extraordinary things. And I started reporting this to people. At one point, I came in and talked to my sponsor, Jack Stuckey, and I said, "Jack, I think we have a stairway to heaven here." He had no idea what he meant, what I meant, but he thought it was very cool. And I really didn't know what I meant. I was struggling to find language to describe what I see with my inner mind. And as a result of those discoveries, I was back there again this year in April and was again invited to speak. And they actually arranged for me to stay an extra 2 days so I could be there alone and study the land there more carefully and learn more about it. And so this is my third trip. And this time I'm going back to Council Grove on the 19th of the month in 2 weeks to, I think it's 2 weeks, 1 week, 1 week, to do a earth blessing ceremony. I'm going to scatter sea minerals on the soil as a way to regenerate and renew the life of the land itself, the soil fertility, the microorganisms, and all that grows from that. And this will be done in a prayerful way so that we will also be scattering our prayers on this place. I believe that this site, White Memorial Camp, is an ancient and sacred site that was used for countless centuries as a ceremonial place where people came together and performed ceremonies to keep heaven and earth connected to each other. This is a very extraordinary thing which we don't understand well in our world today, but I've been exploring myself for quite a few years. And so this is one of the duties I have as a spiritual person, is to find these places and to go do ceremonies to honor them and to invite them to awaken and become part of our lives, part of human culture again. Because the earth has been quiet and dormant for a long time. But it's obvious to me that the earth is changing very rapidly now, and the earth is preparing to attract some attention to herself. And if you want to pin a label on me, I am a healer who serves the mother. And so this is one of the duties that I have. And so I've come back to Kansas in order to try and visit this sacred site and do what I can to bring attention and honor to the place and to begin to perform ceremonies there that can awaken the land and begin to renew the abundance and the life of the land. So I'd like you to not just hear me talk about this, I would hope to give you a little taste of this. In order to do this, I'm going to introduce you to something you may have probably never heard of, but it's the fact that we have a sacred alphabet. We have not only sacred geometry, we have sacred alphabet too. There is an inner meaning, an inner tradition of sacred purpose to what numbers and letters are all about. And so the first sound of the alphabet, the sound A, like the shape, it's a wedge that penetrates and opens space to create the first dimension. So I'd like you to join me in making the sound A. We'll do it three times the first time. It takes a little time for people to learn to harmonize their voices together. So we'll say the sound three times. So take a deep breath. Center yourself and breathe in again. And when you breathe out, make the sound A. So in language, vowels carry the vibration, which is the power of sound. So the first letter of the alphabet is a vowel, the A sound. The second vowel sound is the E sound, which, like its shape, creates a two-dimensional vibration, a plane of vibration. So let's make that sound just once. Breathe in deep. E. So now we come to the third vowel sound, the one that's also a pronoun, the rising sound that takes you high, I. So these first three sounds construct the three-dimensional world of vibration that we live in here. That's the power of sound right there. So breathe in deep. So there are 26 letters in the alphabet, which is 2 times 13. There happens to be 13 moons in a year, 13 scales on the great turtle's back, and Native people say this is Turtle Island, that we ride on that turtle's back. So the first 13 letters are the male energies that build that three-dimensional physical world that we inhabit. But the second 13 letters are the feminine energies. And the first feminine vowel is the round sound that makes things spin. And so we take the three dimensions of space and fold it in on itself in order to allow things to move around and around. And this brings us to the dimension of time. 106 years ago, Einstein taught us we live not in two or even three dimensions. We live in space, time, four dimensions. This is what relativity taught us. So now we come to the round sound, the ovary sound, the first power of women expressed as sound. And so we take pattern and fold it in on itself and compress it and store it inside a container to create the holy grail of memory, the chalice of genetic instruction. So let's make the feminine sound of O. Breathe in deep. O. So in evolution, it was the reptiles who harnessed this geometry, and by turning their outside, their hard, bony shells to the inside, they created a central spinal column, and their peripheral nerves became now a central nervous system. And they learned to harness this little geometric trick of turning the outside to the inside to create this round sound for reproduction and made the eggs. Reptiles perfected the egg as a means of reproduction and evolution. And of course, next came along the birds, and the birds learned to take those eggs and put them in a nest in order to hatch them out. And this later in mammals became the uterus sound. This is the second feminine vowel sound. I haven't quite figured out what it is about you yet, but this is also another pronoun sound. And so now it's not I, but now we are confronting the you. And it's interesting to me that the you, as a pronoun, has the Y, the O, and U, which are all three of the feminine vowel sounds. So let's make the you sound. Breathe in deep. You. So then we come to the last sound, the one that I like the best, not just because it's in my name, but because it's the only sound that asks a question. Why? And whereas the A was about separating the one into two, now the Y is about bringing the two back together again into one as we complete the sequence of creation. So let's take one more deep breath and make this last sound. Why? So just the taste of something. Perhaps you can feel a little shift inside yourself. Perhaps you feel a little shift in the room because we have cleared the air, shall we say, by putting out this vibration. This is an ancient technology of how we create sacred space. It's not something mystical or very odd. It's a very natural process of understanding how to set ourselves up within a chamber of the divine. We all come from a sacred space. We come from that uterus. And we all return to a sacred space. We go back to the spiritual world when our journey here is over. So if we go into mathematics, which is our other code, numbers and letters, then 1 gives us a point, 2 gives us a line, Actually, I have to tell you, it's actually a lie. There are no lines. There's only circles, but we won't go there for the moment. But three, the third number, gives us the triangle, the Trinity. And this is what gives us stability amidst the spinning world of duality. When we make the letter three, we draw that connection to the center. In any spinning system, the center is the place that's not moving, the place of rest and peace. And so three touches that central space and allows us to create stability within this spinning, gyrating universe. Which brings us to four. We go from the triangle. When we create the fourth point, we create the first shape of solid geometry, the tetrahedron, which has four faces with three triangles arranged to each vertex. If you take two tetrahedrons, one pointing up, flip it over, the other one pointing down, and nest them together and draw the points together, you create the icosahedron, the next shape in solid geometry, which is four triangles to a vertex. Looks like two pyramids base to base. And if you take and draw the points connecting the faces, the center of the faces of this octahedron together, you create the cube. And this is the reality that we live in. We live in a cubic world of those three dimensions. I think it's curious that we use a letter of the alphabet, Q, one of the oddest letters of all, to describe the geometry of our three-dimensional reality. But this is the world that we inhabit, the three dimensions of space. So when we understand this geometry, we know that there is this process of taking this cubic reality that we live in and turning it inside out, folding the outside to the inside and the inside to the outside. And this infolding process is part of the mystery of sacred geometry. This is what Michael very elegantly portrayed for us with his Native American story. Because when we have those three dimensions, we have the six directions. We have north and east, south and west, front and back, left and right. We now have orientation in this spinning reality. So the four directions honors our connection to this stable geometrical reality of four square reality. But how do we take and turn this inside out? How do we accomplish this transformation? In order to do this, we have to arrange to have five triangles to a vertex. This is the icosahedron and the dodecahedron. And five-sided symmetry is based on the phi ratio, which some of you may know better as the Da Vinci Code. And this is the ratio of regeneration and embodiment. And once we accomplish this, we find that we have a figure which has 12 vertexes and 20 faces. And when you turn this inside out, the vertexes become vortexes and the faces become phases. So even in the language used to describe this geometry, encoded is this transformation of linear to circular time. And so the seventh direction is born from this. The seventh direction is the direction inwards. As we say, and we do a program called New Warrior Training, where we teach men to go within themselves and look at themselves, look into their heart, and understand the true, authentic nature of their feelings and their being. And we tell men that if you're not within, you're without. The seventh direction is where we go into the heart of our own being and discover the seat where our soul resides, that part of us which is immortal. And this pathway, unfortunately, has been closed and locked to human beings for a long time. The man you mentioned who was burned at the stake, he was trying to open that door. He was trying to awaken people to access this seventh direction, the inner direction. And this is, seventh direction is the number that is uniquely human. That's why we have 7 days in a week. This is why we parse out our time in seven parts. It's because this is what is uniquely human. We are all about the seventh direction. This is our unique perspective that we have in the universe. The odd thing is that when you take and put five triangles to a vertex, you take the icosahedron and the dodecahedron, but if you put six triangles to a vertex, it collapses into a hexagon, which is two-dimensional. In order to put seven triangles to a vertex, you can't really do that unless you bend space in on itself. And so this is what happens when we go to the seventh direction, is we begin to turn inwards and create this negative curvature, this inward direction. So this is where we go when we find sacred space. We find the pathway that leads within all things. And this is what the land, I find, offers. This is, there are certain places where the land itself offers up this experience of going within and touching inner space. There are certain places in the land where the natural flows of energy, the waters that rise underneath the earth and circulate underneath the land, and also the magnetic streams of energy that come down on the land and radiate out across it, there are certain places where they come together in an alignment so that heaven and earth and all that is part of this physical plane are all locked together into a focal point. And these are sacred places. The one at Council Grove is one that seems to extend an influence of at least 100, perhaps 200 miles around. It's a very significant regional scale sacred center in the land. There's many, and this afternoon after the potluck, we'll take a hike on the 5 acres of land here, and we'll explore this space and find sacred space here on this land and understand a little better about what this reality is that has become so alien and unknown to our modern culture. So if I leave you with one message, it is that if we're going to make it to the future, this is the most important thing, is we have to go within ourselves and access this spiritual source of our being, of abundance, of the awareness that we have as special creatures on this earth, as human beings. This is our spiritual legacy, is to achieve this inward direction. And I think it's time for the doors to this direction to be opened and human beings to be given free access to the world within again. In the work that I do, I teach people to locate underground water streams. I teach people to locate magnetic lines by helping them to go within and access not their five outer senses, but their inner senses, their intuitional knowledge of the subtle fields of energy, of the intelligence of life that's all around us. And so I find it something of a humorous thing to watch. For example, the space shuttle used to be fired off into orbit all the time, and I always thought that it was silly doing this because we can go to the stars, but we need to leave our physical bodies behind us. The pathway to the stars leads within ourselves. I've been through the doorway of death. That's part of what has prepared me for this journey, is that I had a near-death experience with 6,000 volts going through me, and then I broke my back. And I survived that and managed to get on my feet and walk again. I've been to heaven. I know there is a world beyond this one. We may live in four dimensions, but I know that there's five, and modern physics is beginning to postulate that maybe there's 11, and I think they're just beginning to figure out the mystery that's in there. So I believe that in the next 13 months, the world is going to change in a very dramatic way. We're about to begin a new cycle on the planet. And I think that the spirit of what I have shared here this morning tells me that this congregation, this path of spiritual knowledge, is very much in tune to this, because very simply, the most fundamental instruction that spiritual teachers have always brought here is always to live in peace. So I was very touched by the story for the children this morning. So this is what we have to do, is we have to achieve peace. And we have to begin to access our inner knowledge of who we are and what our place here is on the planet, and begin to participate in life again and honor the sacred places and honor the life that is the earth itself. And then we can begin to build a future here on the planet. I think I've probably said enough. I hope I've nurtured your minds a little bit to understand that There is this other dimension, this inward dimension of existence, and I encourage you all to learn about it and develop your own capacity to explore the world within. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Let us sing Our World is One World, hymn number 134. By what miracle does the cracker made from Kansas wheat, the cheese ripened in French caves, this fig grown and dried near Ephesus turn into me? My eyes, my hands, my cells, my organs, juices, thoughts, feelings. Am I not then Kansas wheat and French cheese and figs? The rain and the wind from which the wheat grows? The grass that becomes milk and cheese, figs no doubt the ancient prophets ate. So let us go share food.
Well, and that's the weird thing is I don't really think people do trust Foxy Newsy. But it's distracting enough. It's distracting enough that we don't have an honest conversation.
We have nothing to worry about,
yeah.
Especially in the coffee.
Uh-huh.
Coffee has no calories.
Right.
It is not a good food.
Right.
So why worry about coffee? I'm trying to be funny.
And that's a joyful statement there, I think. I don't drink coffee, so I'm fine.
Jerry Falwell also said God would never allow it.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah. I'm Sabrina Boker. I have a question.